And the Samaritans were people who the Jewish people didn't like. And that's to put it mildly. He came by, this Samaritan, and when he saw him, he had compassion on him. And at his own expense and his own effort, he helped the man. And Jesus said to the lawyer, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" And the lawyer replied, "The one who had mercy on him." And Jesus said, "Go and do likewise." The compassion is having sympathy and putting it into action, even if it's at your expense and with people that you don't particularly get on with. So he lived it, he taught it, and he also expects it from us and from the teachings that we have from Paul with the Ephesians 4:32. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving one another. 1 Peter 3:8. Again, finally, all of you, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate and humble. And 1 John 3:17. If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? He lived it, he taught it, and he expects it from us, so we need to take heed the teaching of Jesus. And Jesus is now showing compassion and offering this mainly Gentile, this non-Jewish crowd, the same opportunity to be fed not just the bread and the fish, but his teaching, his miraculous power that he had also offered to the Jewish people. And he miraculously multiplied the 7 loaves of bread and the few fish that disciples had brought to the 4,000 men. And we say men because it was only men that were actually officially counted. And if you add the women and children who would also have been there, it could have been anything from 10 to 20,000 people. And a note, each time in both the passage of the 5,000 and the passage talking about the 4,000, he thanks Jesus himself, thanked God for the provision. So that is a lesson for us that we need to continually thank God for his provision. And in this passage, we're learning of the spiritual blindness that keeps us from seeing Jesus and what he can do. And in this passage tonight, there are two kinds of blind people, the Pharisees and the disciples. After the feeding, Jesus sets sail with the disciples to Dalmanutha. And when he's met by this group of like ad hoc committee of Pharisees who immediately accost him and start to question him. And they test him and ask him for a sign from heaven. And he sighs deeply and says, "Why does this generation ask for a miraculous sign? I tell you the truth, no sign will be given to it." And the English translation of the second part of Jesus' response misses really the sharpness of his reply, because the text reads literally, "May God strike me down, or may I be accursed of God if a sign is to be given to this generation." The Pharisees, who claim to know God and to teach God's law to others, don't see the signs that God has already displayed, all these miracles that Jesus has done, all the healing, the feeding of the multitudes. They don't see it because of their own spiritual blindness. And they're asking for a sign. They want proof. And people who are skeptical, they want proof. Now, there's a true story from 2001 of a man called Eric Weinmeier who became the first blind person to successfully summit Mount Everest. And he tells his story. "A few days after I arrived in the Khumbu Valley for the Mount Everest climb, a rumour began circulating. Because I wasn't flopping on my face every few minutes, the Sherpas thought I was lying about my blindness. Women would approach me in the alleys of the Namkhi Bazaar and wave their hands in front of my face. I'd feel the wind and flinch, which only confirmed their suspicions. So finally, I resorted to drastic measures. I asked Cammy Tenzing, our climbing guide, into the kitchen tent. "Cammy," I said, "I want to give you a message to take back to the Sherpas." If you're squeamish, just a little warning. I pulled down my left lower eyelid, leaned my head forward, and my prosthetic eye plopped out into my palm. "I can take the other one out if you want," I said. "No," he said firmly, "not necessary." And Jesus points out to his disciples that it's this truth-seeking skepticism is like yeast. Got a picture of yeast. And yeast is this ingredient, obviously, that makes bread rise. I say obviously, I've never actually made any bread myself, but we all know yeast is in bread. Apparently, you only need a very small amount of yeast to make bread. And Jesus, because he's just fed the multitude with 7 loaves of bread, he uses the example of yeast to give the disciples a spiritual lesson. The yeast of the Pharisees and Herod had to do with their unbelieving rejection of Jesus, because Herod had also asked for a sign. And this was a warning to the disciples, perhaps, that just a small amount of yeast, the small amount of yeast that it takes to make bread, can transform. So if the Pharisees, talking about the yeast of the Pharisees, a small amount of listening to the Pharisees could turn something good into something bad really quickly. Asking for a sign instead of believing his teachings and his miracles. And today, do we ask for a sign? There are some people who don't have any faith, and they would want to see a sign before they would come to faith. Jesus came into the world. God sent his son into the world. Jesus died on the cross and rose from the dead. So we don't need signs. Now, the next scene in the passage is actually quite comical, isn't it? Because the disciples think he's still talking about having no bread. So Jesus must be exasperated by this point, and he says, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes that fail to see? Do you have ears that fail to hear? And don't you remember?" Well, I think that could sound like many of us. Like the Pharisees, the disciples also fail to see the signs Jesus has shown them. But it's not because they are skeptical, more because they can't see the wood for the trees. And I think sometimes we can't see the wood for the trees. So, for example, Jesus has just fed 9,000 men, plus however many women and children, with next to nothing. The disciples were there. They were there at the first miracle. They were there at this miracle. The disciples gave out the food, and they helped to gather up the leftovers, the 12 baskets full and the 7 baskets full. They actually had front row seats, so to speak, at both events, but they've apparently forgotten about it. And now they're actually worrying and wondering how they're going to make enough lunch for 13 people with 1 loaf of bread. And even when Jesus reminds them and jogs their memories, they still don't fully grasp it, because, as he says, they have hardened hearts. They'd already seen his power multiply a few loaves and fish to fill the hungry crowd with some left over. And this is an identical problem, and they're wondering how it can be done. The last time they were in a deserted place, it all worked out fine. They're now in a remote place, and they're asking in verse 4, but where in this remote place can anyone get enough bread to feed all these people? And the answer to the question is obvious from Jesus, but the disciples are still slow on the uptake, and they still don't understand, and they're still struggling for answers, and they're still expecting nothing miraculous from Jesus. And so Jesus takes them patiently, has the patience, and says to the disciples to go through the list of supplies like a father trying to patiently talk to his children. And their anxiety over such worldly things is keeping them from seeing what Jesus has already done in front of them. Worrying about where the next meal is coming from makes them deaf to his warning and blind to his warning against blindness and about the yeast of the Pharisees. They still don't realize that even with one loaf, the sparse supplies, they have in Jesus enough to feed the entire world. And I definitely, absolutely think that this affects all of us, because all of us worry at some time. So recently, we had a gift day, and we were worrying about whether we would receive enough funds to cover all the things, that the items that we needed to cover. And we worried about that for quite a while. And what happened was that God provided more than we needed. And that's just an example. So we either don't learn the lessons of experience, or maybe we forget them, like the disciples. We all have experience of things. Sadness comes. It was difficult, and it is difficult, but we came through it, and we're still standing. We have a problem, and we think how this is impossible to solve, but it was solved. We worried about something, but it passed. And then we wondered why we worried about it. But then we worry about the next thing, not remembering that the thing before that we worried about was solved. We still worry because we don't learn. Because we too are blind with hardened hearts. And if only we would heed the lessons of experience in the right way, then maybe it would teach us all that God has brought us this far in safety. Maybe the outcomes to things are not what we would want, but he's brought us this far to safety, and he can bring us through anything. But so why do we become so easily discouraged, and why do we have short memories of remembering God's previous actions of faithfulness and love in our lives? All of us have our difficulties and our failures in trusting God. Hebrews 11 verse 6 says, "And without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him." Like us, the disciples must have pleased God, yet they sometimes displayed weak faith and exasperated him. But Jesus didn't give up, and Jesus never gives up. He didn't give up on the disciples, so that holds out hope that he won't give up on us when we exasperate him. When he says in verse 21, "Do you still not understand?" So there's hope for us. The Pharisees refused to see. The disciples just cannot see yet. And that would happen after Jesus' death and resurrection. The theologian Tim Geddert describes the disciples' situation in this passage in Mark as this: "Followers, however dull and unfaithful, are patiently instructed. If they follow all along the way Jesus leads, they will eventually be transformed from mere data collectors into meaning discerners. It all hinges on the decision for or against Jesus." So to finish, the significance even of the two feedings show that Jesus is the bread of life. His kindness and compassion teach us that he is our loving provider, able to provide for us under any circumstances. Hebrews 13:8 tells us that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So he doesn't change. And if he's fed 5,000, it can feed 4,000. If he's done it before, it can do it again. We just need to open our eyes and put our trust in him. We know this, but we need to do this. And remember from the start that inattentional blindness is what people experience when they are focused on one thing and they completely fail to see something else right before their eyes. It's easy to miss something you're not looking for. The question is, are you focusing on the physical bread instead of the bread of life? Let us finish in prayer.